Hey, everybody. Different kind of show today. With the introduction of One Championship on TNT, you know, obviously a big step forward for the organization there. I thought I would explain to you a few of the differences between One Championship and some of the other major organizations that you're probably more familiar with. There are a few differences, and obviously you're seeing fighters move over from one organization to another back and forth, and this will give you a bit of an understanding of A, how the fighters, you know, adapt, and also how the rules can change as you move around from one organization to another. I think there are lots of really interesting things that One Championship are doing. I like the hydration protocol that encourages the fighters to be on their natural weight to compete. And I'll get into that in a moment with the shift in the weight classes, etc. But there are some rules as well, which I think have been tweaked by One, which make for more exciting and more, you know, fast-paced, explosive fights. First of all, One Championship has three rule sets in which fighters can compete under. They have the kickboxing rule set, in which they wear 8-ounce gloves up to featherweight, and then beyond featherweight, they wear 10-ounce gloves, lace-ups, taped, but big gloves. Then they have the Muay Thai rules, which are the smaller gloves, these gloves I've got in front, which are the same as the MMA gloves. So it's basically Muay Thai rules. But you know, sometimes it will take place in a cage or over a ring. All the rules are the same. When it comes to mixed martial arts, the rules are slightly different. I will get into them a little later on, but the introduction of the Muay Thai and the kickboxing as well, it gives a lot of variety to the show. So, you know, if you're watching one of the shows on TNT, and you've not seen a One Championship event before, you might notice that every now and then there's a kickboxing match, or sometimes you'll even notice, if you look into their back catalog, that they'll use a ring instead of a cage. That can be determined by how many kickboxing and Muay Thai fights are on the card. If it's predominantly an MMA card, then they will use a cage. But that can vary. So not only do the rules change, but the arena can change as well. And with the three different rule sets, it introduces lots of different fighters from different disciplines. You know, having the likes of John Wayne Parr and Nicky Holskin on a card, and then you've got Demetrius Johnson taking on Adriano Moraes as well. It's, you know, to be able to house all of these fighters in their own rule sets, I think, is a very exciting move. And also the difference with, you know, the Muay Thai in the cage with the small gloves, it makes it a far more interesting and impactful bout, because, you know, a lot of those shots that they would normally block on the gloves, they slip through the gaps and around the edges. The kickboxing rule set is, you know, as you would imagine, knees are allowed. You can clinch to throw a knee. There's a 3-second time where you can hold the clinch to knee or counter, but then that has to be broken. It will be separated by the referee if not. Muay Thai is, you know, standard A-class Muay Thai rules, as you would expect in Thailand. Elbows, knees, spinning, downward, whatever you like. Anything as flamboyant and as fancy as you've seen in the martial arts movies. I really love the small gloves Muay Thai. I really think it's going to take off. Obviously, Rod Tang and Haggerty are a couple of my favorites there to check out. When it comes to the weight classes, so this caused a little bit of confusion if people aren't familiar with One Championship. So as a way of avoiding the whole weight cutting culture in mixed martial arts, you know, as you know, someone who's fighting at lightweight in, you know, say Bellator or the UFC or one of the other major organizations, they'll be fighting at lightweight, but they'll cut to lightweight the day before, step on the scales at 155 pounds, and then they'll be rehydrated by the time the fight occurs, and then they'll be, you know, anywhere 15, 20 pounds heavier than their actual weight class. There's a lot of risk in this. There's a lot of danger in this. But, you know, given the fact that that's kind of the culture in the sport, and it's, you know, there's nothing to deter it, then it does continue. Whereas One have taken a different approach, which I think in the long run, it's going to take some adjustment for some people. But in the long run, I think it's going to work out much better, given the fact that the fighters are not having to cut weight to get on the scales. So the way it works, my understanding is that, you know, when the fighters arrive during fight week, their weight is tested, and they're tested every day. They're also hydration tested, urine tests, to make sure that they're within their weight class all the way through fight week. You know, so if you're a lightweight fighter, say Eddie Alvarez, for example, came over from the lightweight division where he was weighing 155. He moves over to ONE Championship where now he's still fighting at lightweight, but his weight limit is 170. So all of the weight classes, the traditional weight classes, as you know them, have shifted up a weight class in order to take away the need for a weight cut. The weight classes are still called the same. So, for example, lightweight is at 170 instead of 155. And the other interesting difference is heavyweight starts at 225 instead of 205 to make room for the light heavyweight division. The hydration testing all the way through fight week is also continued during the training camps of the fighters. You know, they have an online web portal where they update their weight on a regular. So they are tracked and monitored. Nobody's jumping up and down weights at short notice or anything like that. And I think that, you know, if this can be implemented, you know, just generally around the world, it would change the weight cutting culture. And I think it would benefit not only the fighters' health, but their performances as well. I'm hoping we're going to do some more coverage on it on the Full Reptile channel. We'll get some Raptors out to a ONE Championship event and we'll cover some of that because, you know, and everybody I've spoken to that's fought for ONE Championship, you know, John Wayne Parr's just got back home after his recent bout. And he said outright, it's the best organization I've ever fought for. They just looked after him very well. You know, they monitor his health. You know, that is of great importance to the organization. And I think that shows in their weight, in their hydration protocol. You know, I think there are some challenges around it. And I think there are some things that could be made slightly easier. You know, I mean, the confusion around the fans, given the fact that the weight classes they're effectively different weight classes, but they're named the same. I kind of feel like ONE should have stood their ground on their weight classes. And, you know, if you're coming over from another organization as a 155er, but you normally have to cut from 170 to 155, well, now you're a welterweight. I think that would have saved some of the confusion, but the intention to correct that problem in the sport, I think is a big step forward. The other thing as well, while we're on weight, is catch weights are allowed. The difference in a catch weight can be no more than 5% though. So if a fighter's weighing in at 170, their opponent can't weigh in any more than 5% more than their opponent, which would be 178. So, you know, you're looking at a good few pounds. But I mean, you know, I still think ONE Championship are very much finding their feet. And I think what they've got is a few real standout stars that are able to transition from one weight class to another. And that also does confuse things a little bit, you know, guys that are go and grab a couple of belts and are trying to defend them both at the same time. It's a huge challenge for everyone to keep up with. Okay, what else am I getting onto? Let me do the judging criteria, because this is something else that's different with ONE as well. So obviously in most organizations, they'll use the 10-point must system. It's under the unified rules where each round is judged on a basis of 10 points or less for each fighter in there. You know, so usually if one fighter wins the round, you know, fairly clearly, then they'll get 10 points and their opponent will get 9. If it was a dominant round or there was a big knockdown or a near finish, it would be a 10-8 round. And these scores are accumulated over 3 or 5 rounds to then determine who's the winner at the end. The difference with ONE Championship is that they score the fight as a whole. So there's no division over the rounds. You know, if you can have a really terrible first round and a pretty rough second round, but then have a fantastic third round, and that could win you the fight. Or you could have a real good first round and then, you know, have a very steady rest of the fight where neither fighter takes hold, and you could have done enough in the first round to get the judges' scorecards. So it's not divided up. You know, as soon as the first 5 minutes is up, it's not okay, that's sectioned off and you're judged on that piece alone, and then we move into the second round and start fresh. It rolls on, so it's judged as a fight in general. So the accumulation of work over the fight is something that fighters can really, really benefit from. There have been a couple of fights recently. There was a fight between Ray Yun-ok and Murat Gafarov, And that was a fight that I could have seen definitely under the old unified rules that may have been judged differently based on the, you know, the wrestling and back taking of Gafarov. But the accumulation of work and the intention to finish from Ock was what won him the decision in that fight. And I think it's an interesting conversation to have between the two judging criterias. I don't think one's better than the other. I actually quite like the idea of the fight just being judged as a whole. But you know, it's a conversation to have. I think it's interesting that people are trying different things, certainly. And it does more lean into the idea of it is one thing as opposed to broken down into sections. I think the scoring over individual rounds much more leans towards a sporting context, whereas the scoring the fight as a whole is much more about the success of martial arts. But I mean, that's just a general and very, very basic opinion of mine. I'm sure I can get into that at some point in the future. The judging criteria, although it's worded differently, and I'll read this directly off the One Championship website, although the wording is slightly different, it does speak to the same terms as the unified rules. So decision wins. In the event that a bout goes the distance, it will go to a judge's decision. The three judges will score the bout in its entirety, not round by round. Judges will utilize the one judging criteria in descending order of importance to determine the winner of the bout. So the important thing to remember in that part is the in descending order. Same as the unified rules, they are listed out by priority. You know, so the one judging criteria, near KO or submission is the most important. Damage, internal, accumulated or superficial, striking combinations and cage generalship, which includes ground control and superior positioning. And then earned takedowns or takedown defense, and then aggression is last. So my initial thoughts on this, so near KO or submission, damage and striking combinations, that all for me falls under effective striking and grappling. You know, you've got cage generalship in there. That is cage control. So being able to manage the range and the distance or the speed of the fight, whether you're controlling it with footwork from the center or whether you're controlling it from top position or from the back, you know, these are all things that are going to lean into the judges and their scoring criteria. But the priority is always the near knockouts, the big impactful shots, and the attempts at submissions that come close. So the intention is always to score the finish. And to be honest, the judging criteria is very similar in a lot of ways to the new criteria, where the onus is on finishing the fight as opposed to controlling the fight. Again, you know, it's the way to go. The difference here, earned takedowns, I feel, are, you know, when someone intends to get a takedown and they work for it and they get it, is I mean, it's just, it could be as simple as that. Obviously in transitions, in scuffles, there are people, you know, people get tangled up and fall to the floor or those kind of scenarios. They also mention takedown defense, which, to my knowledge, and I will double check this, but to my knowledge, is not a priority on the scoring criteria of the unified rules. As Mark Goddard puts it so eloquently, defense is its own reward. So I think it's interesting that takedown defense is listed there. I'm neither for nor against it. I do agree with Mark Goddard that defense is its own reward. But then, you know, if takedown defense is being used to maintain the fight in your range, like say if you're a striker and you want to keep the fight standing, takedown defense is your showing your ability to control the range of the fight. So, I mean, for me, it would probably fall under the superior positioning and cage generalship section of the scoring. And then aggression being the last criteria. Obviously you have to intend to win the fight. So that is, you know, that's up there. Cause if all of these other things are even, then you strip it right back to, you know, well, who was the most aggressive? So if they both had a near knockout or a near submission, they've both been beat to hell and, you know, and they're both pretty damaged. They've both got beautiful striking combinations and they've been managing the cage about 50-50 and neither of them have earned nor defended takedowns very well. Then you've got aggression to fall back on. It's, you know, you can see how the scoring criteria is worked through for the judges. The only difference, as I said, is that scoring criteria is not applied to one round And then that score is put to bed and we go, okay, round two, let me judge this from a whole new perspective. That's the main difference, which, you know, again, like I said, I think is an interesting, it's an interesting way of approaching it. Ultimately, I think we get the same results though. I don't think it affects the fights in a great deal. I think if anything, and I've had a conversation with a couple of my good judge friends and they've given me very interesting perspectives on this and on their opinions of it and how it differs to the unified rules, which is what they're more familiar with. And I think, you know, there are pros and cons to both. We'll get a podcast together at some point and we'll discuss it because they're both fascinating individuals. And I think, you know, we have to realize as well that MMA is a young sport. You know, we're talking 30, 35 years at the most, and we're still trying to figure things out and things do have to shift and change. And the attempt to fix the weight cutting problem, I think is a big step forward for one. And also the way that things are scored and judged, it leads for exciting fights. It encourages people to push for a finish and be decisive. And I think that should always be the focus of mixed martial arts. Okay. The last thing I need to get onto quickly is the differences between the MMA rules and the unified rules. So they are largely the same. You know, everything that you will have seen in a normal MMA contest that we will have seen in another organization is exactly the same. The striking areas, the legal striking targets are exactly the same. You know, you can't strike to the back of the head or the spine. You can't spike an opponent. You can't pick them up and slam them on their head. Obviously, if they're clamped onto an armbar and they don't want to let go of it, that's their decision. So, you know, whatever happens, happens. But largely, the rules are the same. The main standout differences, the first one that most people will notice is knees to the head on the ground. There is a misconception that you used to be able to kick to the head on the ground. You know, soccer kicks, like head kicks on the ground, although they were exciting in Pride because it was a bit chaotic, they tend to only land on guys that are already pretty much out of the fight. And the kind of force you can generate with a kick at that range, I think is unnecessary. They've taken that out for a long while and I agree with that, but there was a misconception around this. And just as an example, there was a fight on the recent one on TNT 2 card where, I'm going to remember his name here, Zoltsetseg kicked Nakahara in the side of the head when he was trying to escape a heel hook. He kind of try and play it off a little bit and be cheeky about it. But it was a clear kick to the head as he was trying to turn over to escape the heel hook. And that's a good example. So kicks to the head are not allowed at all on the floor. That's a blanket rule across all mixed martial arts now, as far as I know. The knees to the head on the ground is a different rule. And that's something that you will see in ONE Championship. I think it's a very interesting rule. I like it. I would have loved to have fought under those rules. The most recent one we saw was Demetrius Johnson losing in his fight with Adriano Moraes. It was the knee that finished him off, and it was a really well-timed knee. The other reason I like this, and if I think back to Renier Derrida against Galvao, he had him in a vice grip, and he finished that fight with knees to the head because he was able to control his opponent. It keeps the fight moving in certain circumstances where people can stall and be on their knees. And oftentimes we'll be watching an MMA fight and someone will be in a position. Now I'm thinking to myself, if he could knee him in the head, that fight's game over. I like the fact that it keeps the fights moving. And you know, I don't think they're a great deal more dangerous than elbows, to be honest. When you can generate that kind of force that you can from mount with an elbow or something like that. You know, this is not a tickling contest after all, as has been said before. So I like this rule, and I think it forces the fights to keep moving. That's one of the main differences you'll see. And the other main difference is downward elbows, 12 to 6 elbows. So this is a greatly debated rule in the unified rules, and for the most part, people don't agree with it. You know, I've discussed it with Joe Rogan and he thinks it's a silly rule. It should be taken out. Downward elbows, 12 to 6, are legal in Muay Thai. You know, A-class Muay Thai rules, under the ONE Muay Thai global rule set, you're allowed to use downward elbows. And it was never even considered to be taken out of the rules when they introduced elbows into the ONE MMA global rule set. So 12 to 6 elbows are legal, which is very, very cool. And you'll see, you know, I mean, you'll see them used in Muay Thai. Haggerty has got a wicked flying, like, downward elbow that he chops into his opponent with. But I've seen him used against the fence as well. You know, oftentimes there's an opportunity where you can go from having an overhook and you can drive your elbow down and strike from that position. And I've seen it a couple of times in one MMA fights. I think it's an interesting rule, and I don't think there's any reason for downward elbows to be, considered to be any more dangerous than anything else. You know, elbows are wicked, and downward elbows are a hell of a weapon to use. So I think I've covered everything. So we've got kickboxing in 8 or 10 ounce gloves, which shifts at featherweight. Muay Thai in the cage is 4 ounce gloves, the same as the MMA fights. You know, the standard. Well, I suppose I'll talk a bit about the gloves. I like these gloves. I actually ordered a medium because I'm usually a medium in MMA gloves. And these are a little small for me. I'm going to order a new set, and Veronica's going to steal these. But these are, they're the Fairtex gloves. I wore Fairtex like a lot of the way through my career. Anytime I was going to an event they weren't supplying me with gloves, which was often, I would always take my Fairtex ones. They're a great glove. You can see the slight curve in the hand as well, which doesn't pull the hand open like other gloves that we've discussed. We don't see many eye pokes in one championship. And I do think a big part of it is the fact that once you put your hand in, there's a natural curve in the glove, which encourages a closed fist. But they're some of the best gloves in the MMA world, without a doubt. Weight classes are all shifted. So if you know somebody as being a lightweight at 155, one championship lightweight is 170. It's exactly the same. They've just taken out the need for the weight cut. So they've just added an additional weight class on. It's an interesting concept, and I think it makes the fighters much more healthy. And it will show in their performances. I think we've seen that now at this point with fighters moving up a weight class and just looking so much better. I do think that we're starting to get some ground on this weight cutting thing, and I think one are doing a good job with it. Just remember this when you're watching it, because the fights are judged over the fight and not over the round. So it's judged as a whole, and then downward elbows, knees to the head are legal. But you can't kick to the head on the ground. I think that's everything. Enjoy the fights. Catch you next time.